thanks for making us a part of your day today. This is the Live Transform Podcast, episode 195.
That's right. For $1.95.
You will send you a special anointed coin to put in your shoe so that every time you put your foot down, it will be anointed and blessed where you are. And everywhere you put your foot down, victory will
come. That's why this podcast is the one.
Now listen, that is an ad that I actually heard on Christian radio one time.
Are you serious about a coin?
Yeah. Put this coin in your shoe. So every time you put your foot down, you're putting your foot down the anointed coin, which means you're going to fulfill the scripture that God gave to Abraham. Everywhere you put the sole of your feet, you're going to be blessed.
Yep. Changing the atmosphere.
It will be given
with
to
that
you.
Coin. You know, he won't forget that it's $1.95 day today.
Yeah. You know, can I tell this story I was just telling you guys about Mr. Jesus?
Yeah.
You know, you got, it's changed so much. A lot of young Christians today, absolutely, they haven't watched this history of, evolve.
How things have changed.
You know, Audrey has probably seen more of this than any of us because your family was in national ministry when you were so young.
When I was 11 years old, our family would get together once a month and fold all the a letter that was Xeroxed with a crank. And they'd be put in front of us, and we'd fold the letters as a family. We'd invite our friends over.
It's called a gestetner.
Yeah, a gestetner. And we'd stuff the envelopes, put the stamps on. You know, so I've been doing this since I'm 55, so that's since I was 11 years old.
Well, that's what my kids did. My kids grew up doing this stuff. And, every weekend for my kids, we started our church in our house.
Right. And so did we.
Every weekend, we would get out all the folding chairs and put out the chairs, clean up the house, and do all this stuff. And we did all the mailing lists together. So.
Boy, we're just kind of going down memory lane.
Yeah.
I mean, last week we talked about tubes in the TV and hitting
absolutely.
It with a banging
with
a hammer.
Hammer.
So this week it's about mailing lists.
So anyhow, back in those days, probably in the early 80s was when they first started developing computer programs that had mailing lists in them.
And they had a way to make them personalized.
Yeah,
this is a brand new concept that they would seem that way. Yeah.
And so what you would do, you would have a mailing list that's just basically a list of names and addresses that you put in your computer if you were a ministry that had a computer. And which, by the way, we were honestly one of the earliest, maybe the earliest small ministry in America to computerize. I mean, we computerized.
I believe it.
I actually put the data in the computer myself. It was me and one other guy figuring out how to do this. But anyhow, so if your name, like for instance, Jim Richards, so the last field is the last name. So you'd write a letter. And then you'd merge that letter with your mailing list.
Yes.
And the computer would, since my last name was Richards, the computer would say, "Dear Mr. Richards, da da da."
And back in that day, it happens all the time now, but back in the day, it was so covert because no one knew that wasn't typed out just for you.
Yeah, and so people would think that they were getting a very personal letter from these organizations. By the way, I'll tell you something interesting. Who was the real... the real flamboyant woman that was so popular out in California.
Catherine Kuhlman. Ding, 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 ding. I win.
That's right. Catherine Kuhlman had this thing about she would not let them automatically put stuff in letters because she just felt like it was too impersonal. And so even though it wasn't really her writing, the letter would come out of a computer, but somebody personally had to sign her name to all those letters. She just felt like it was too deceitful to do that, which I always found interesting. So anyhow, so I was on the board of directors for a publishing company, a very well-known writer that we had, Robert Paul Lamb. He was the guy that really, when I felt like I was supposed to be writing, he was the guy that just kept pushing me to start writing. And so Robert Paul was a very successful, very effective writer. He wrote Jimmy Swaggart's book, To Cross a River, his biography. He wrote Jim Baker's first three really super successful books. I don't remember who all he wrote for, but my God, he was just a great writer. So me and him are really close friends. And like I said, I was on the board of directors and, it helped make decisions and that kind of stuff. So anyhow, So the name of his ministry was Souls for Jesus, which meant in the address or in your name and your name, the last word, the last name, and that was Jesus. So, you know, the computer.
His middle name was Four.
Yeah.
And his first name
the computer, you know, the program is going through, merging these letters and trying to make them sound personal. And so he gets a letter one day and it says, "Dear Mr. Jesus, I've been praying for you. And God has shown me that you're going through a very difficult time." And so it goes through all this stuff that's supposed to sound real personal. And he says, "Mr. Jesus, I am convinced that if you would send a special offering to our ministry, that we would break that God would break these chains of oppression and the anointing would return to you." So all of that to say, when you've been around this stuff as long as we have, which, you know, collectively, we probably got, you know, 125 years of ministry involvement between the three.
We have 195 years. The magic number is 195 today.
So what's really interesting, when you've been in this as long as we have, you see trends that come back over and over and over. And, you know, the trends are the same. The way they put them together are different sometimes because they have computers or because they have, you know, some new technology, but the scam is always the same. And so, you know, there's a couple of things that for 50 years, and I mean, I have been involved in ministry for 49 plus years, so almost 50 years. And so for almost 50 years, it's been really interesting that there's always somebody trying to convince you that if you would give to their ministry, that God would do something for you beyond what he provided through Jesus.
And
that's kind of interesting, you know?
Yeah, it is interesting. It kind of makes you want to go, hmm.
It makes you want to go, excuse me, I'm going to barf.
Oh.
You know, when we put together our package for people that became partners or, you know, financial supporters, we call them world changers. One of the things I did is I looked at the partner packages for every major ministry in America. And I have to say that if they had 10 points of the value of becoming a partner with their ministry, 9 of those 10 points would always be because of our anointing. If you give to us, God's going to give you something beyond what Jesus got you on the cross.
Wow.
You know, like if you give to our ministry, we'll have anointing when we pray and your loved ones will get saved.
Yes.
You know, stuff like that. It's just total, total dishonest to corruption. So, you know, there's always that trend that if you give to somebody, they can get God to do something for you that Jesus couldn't get him to do. That's one thing. Another trend, I'm not going to go into all the trends, but another really, really interesting trend is everybody is trying to tell you that there is something that that will change your life, make your life good, make your life stable, that's based on getting an anointing of some kind rather than developing your character.
Right.
Developing your character, that's a hard sell.
Yes, it is.
You know, I had a guy, man, he was the head of one of the biggest ministry organizations in America at that time. And so he came and visited our church. You know, people always wanted to know what we were doing because it was always different. We were always reaching people. And, you know, it was just always very different and unique. And so people came from everywhere. I mean, big name people would come and want to sit in our services and just say, okay, what is it you guys are doing that's different? And so this guy came and his organization was, I mean, their claim to fame was making disciples, you know. And so he heard me speak. And after it was over with, he said, "Well, I want to give you some pointers." And he said, "You know what?" He said, "Nobody's going to want what you got." And I said, "Well, why?" And he said, "Because of what you say it takes to have it. You know, you're talking about commitment. You're talking about a prayer life." And he said, "If you're telling people they got to do all this to participate, nobody's going to want what you got." And I'm like, "Well, but the problem is that is kind of what Jesus said, right?" You know? And so, you know, what we're talking about here, that there is one one. Hold up, everybody, hold up one finger. One. Right. There is one process for a disciple to come out of where he is and move forward in becoming or putting on the new man. And it is, and it, there, this process is explained a lot of different ways, but it's always the same process. And it's put off the old man, renew the mind, put on the new man. And there is not another process for personal development anywhere in the new covenant. There's not another way to do this without ending up in dead works or, you know, goofy stuff. So this is the reason we started last week. The world is out of place. You know, man, I remember, I think I've told this story before. I remember one time about 70, it was about 73, and it was right after that guy climbed up on the tower out in Texas at that university and started murdering people. You remember? Do you guys remember that? Y'all might be old, I don't know if you are. So anyhow, it was right about that time. And so, you know, I'd go out on the streets and minister, and I was this big anomaly. I mean, everybody was trying to figure out who I was, where I came from, and nobody knew my name. And so, you know, sometimes I didn't realize that people would follow me home to figure out where I lived. So some of them did that because they wanted to come and get personal ministry. Some of them did that for nefarious reasons. So I'm sitting there one night, and you know, man, they're just banging on my door about 11, 12 o'clock at night. And I'm thinking, oh, man, this ain't good. So I go to the door, and there's this guy standing there. Man, I'm telling you, he was so big, he blocked out the moon. You know what I'm saying? He was just one of them big old guys. I mean, he was so big, you know, he had to bend over to come through the door. And so I'm, okay, God. And, you know, just internally just searching, okay, God, this is trouble. You're going to have to help me here. So this guy comes in, sits down, and he says, look, he said, you know, I've got some problems. He started talking to me about his problems. And he said, now, if you don't help me with these problems, he says, then tomorrow morning I will be on top of the courthouse. I'm going to shoot everything that moves. I'm going to kill everything that moves. He says, I'm going to start with killing you. I'm going to go home, kill my wife, and I'm going to tie my mother up so that she can't see the news in the morning to see what's happening. I don't want to break her heart. Now you got a guy like that sitting across the couch from you, and you know, man, I got this rough, tumbly background, but I'm looking at this guy thinking, ain't no way I'm tying up with this guy. I mean, if this goes south, I don't know what's going to happen because this guy is totally out of my league when it comes to violence and anger and size and all that kind of stuff. And I just want you to know, and you know, I can't even count the times that I've had my life threatened. I've had people set traps for me. You know, groups of people to beat me up, and you know, I have guns pulled on me. I've had people try to kill me. I don't even know how many times. You know, I've had the communists try to kill me when I was out doing crusades. I had witch doctors try to kill me when I was out doing crusades. So I've been down this path. So I got news for you. When life becomes this real, what you got in Jesus better be real.
Yes, yes, yes.
Because if it's not, you're going to fold right there.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And for Jim, you know, these are stories you're just like, okay, I ain't never been there.
Threatened to that extent. Yeah.
You know, I mean, these are, you know, what I would classify far out.
Mm-hmm, right.
But what about when your marriage unravels?
Yeah, exactly.
What about when your, you know, child comes home with, you know, different news.
Yeah.
You know, what happens when you lose your job?
Yeah.
You know, then your faith, because life gets real. Life is real.
Life gets real.
And again, this is the journey that we're going to take together, because we really want to help you in this way. And you're looking for that certainty.
Yeah.
Your faith has to be as real.
Yeah. You know, for the past 4 or 5 years, I can't even tell you how often this happens. I'll either see a post on Facebook or I'll get an email from someone who was one of our Bible college students back in the 80s. And one of the things that they always say, they said, you told us everything that's happening now was going to happen. We all thought you were crazy. Now I'm listening. Because everything's happening with the, and it's not because I have a prophetic gift, you know, and it's sad that, you know, all you got to be to anticipate what's going to happen is read the Bible and not be stupid. That's pretty much it. There's no big gifting to it. It's just like, you know, people will say, global, they've been telling us a global warming, it's going to destroy the earth in 12 years. So what do you think, Jim? I said, what difference does it make what I think? What does the Bible say? Well, the Bible don't say nothing about global warming. Exactly. If it don't say nothing about global warming destroying the earth, forget about it. It's not going to destroy the earth. And people, I get those calls all the time. Well, what about this? I'm like, what does the Bible say? Well, the Bible don't say anything about it. Then don't worry about it, you know?
Yeah, it's so simple.
Yeah, so I just want people to know this is not prophetic gifting, but listen to me. You know, I'm about to say something that I don't know if I've ever said publicly. You know, I have had two different times in my life that the state has come after me to put me into prison simply for standing and preaching the gospel, my biblical and my constitutional right. Mm-hmm. And it was something the state did not want me to say or do. And two times, I mean, I'm telling you, I was down to sitting, one time I was down to sitting in an office, you know, with, I can't remember, I had a sheriff there, I had two or three, you know, police kind of people there, investigators there, and I was with the guy that could have that moment made the decision to have me arrested. And one other time, I had the state of Alabama back about 6 years ago give us a cease and desist order in our school of ministry. Now, let me tell you something. This stuff's coming for everybody. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you, it's coming for everybody. And, you know, right here, you may be getting ready to turn me off. Jim, you're too scary. Man, you're doom and gloom. No, I'm not doom and gloom because my message is not that everybody's going to go down the tubes. My message is you can prepare now and be an overcomer when you face these kinds of situations.
Right.
And it ain't going to matter. You know, I've had guns stuck in my face. Like I said, I remember one time I get this call and this guy says, man, I'm telling you, he says, I've heard about you. You're right down here on the streets ministering. He said, can I come to your house? He said, I really need help. And I got this Holy Spirit check about, no, don't let him come to your house. And so I said, okay. I said, you know what? I'll meet with you, but I will not let you can't come to my house. And so this guy picked a place. I knew the place. It was a dark parking lot. And I said, well, okay, God, this is a setup. I know it's set up, but so do I go, do I not go? And the Lord gave me peace to go. So I go down here. And once I get out of my car, they had these guys hidden, and I was surrounded. They surrounded me. And, man, they started, you know, cussing and threatening. And it's like, look, we don't need any of your Jesus. We are just here to beat your ass into this pavement. So I thought, okay, I remember thinking, I got about 30, 45 seconds to share the gospel. And then I don't know if I'm walking out of here alive. And so I just began sharing the gospel with them. I said, all right, you're gonna beat me into a pulp, but then I got one thing I want to say. I said, all right, say it. And I just started sharing the gospel with them. And I'm telling you, in 10 minutes, those guys were on their knees crying and inviting Jesus into their heart. I led everyone into the Lord that night, right there on the spot. Wow. Now, you may say, now, Jim, you know, that's kind of far out and you do all these crazy things. But the point is, it's not that it's going to happen the exact same way, but you're going to find yourself there.
Yeah. And so I know that so many listen, oh, so you shared the gospel. And then here's what they say. So what did you say? Right?
Right. So how can you do that in 10 minutes?
No. But what did you say? And so people want to, you know, create that formula. Yeah. You know, give me the 3-4 points that you shared, Jim, so that I can do that too.
It's called it's called Creation to Calvary. It takes 3 minutes to share. It's in my book, Supernatural Ministry. It's all over our website. It's real simple. But here's the thing. It's got to be real for you.
That's it.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. And so you shared a real life experience. Mm-hmm. And when you share that, there is no rebuttal.
No.
Because it's an experience that no one can defute.
And see, that gets back to, you know, where we left off last week was two really interesting words. One was experiential knowledge.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then the second was self-control.
Yes.
Now, I got news for you. If you get into some of these situations like this and you don't have self-control, you're going to freak out and do something stupid, and you're going to get hurt. But again, my reason for sharing this, you know, I got more stories than you could imagine. I could write probably a 10-volume set of stories that would all be bestsellers. I don't share them all the time because I don't want to build my ministry and I don't want to build your faith on my experiences. Mm-hmm. This is why I share the Word of God with you so deeply and diligently, is because I want you to get your own experience with God. I want you to have your own experiential knowledge, and I want you to be where, whenever something happens, you are that, you're that vine we talked about last week that's wrapped around the oak tree.
Right. I just love that. You know how much that meant to me last mm-hmm. week, because the Lord had already been speaking strength to me that just, and then for you to just give me that picture became my experience, and I felt myself wrapped up around His strength. You know, because then I don't have the pressure to be strong myself. I just get to be wrapped around His strength.
When you look at the descriptions that the Apostle Paul and Jesus mm-hmm. gave that would characterize the people in the time that we live in. And it's right now. Yeah. We're in this. You know, we are at least in the beginning of sorrows.
Right.
That Jesus described, which means we are very quickly going to head into the rise and tribulation of the Antichrist. But when you look at what Paul warns about, and Paul warns about, you know, what's happening in people's lives, he always talks about character. It's always people's character that gets the world to that point. It's always people's character that turns their life into chaos. It's, you know, and so again, we have one of these substitutional false messages. All the trouble in my life is the devil. No, it's not. The trouble in your life is you and the decisions that you're making, and all of your decisions emerge out of your character.
I appreciate this emphasis so much. I mean, for years we've been talking about this, but for years before that, it was always somebody else, or it was the devil, or it was something circumstantial.
Or God testing you, or
with the circumstances of life. Those are all my tests. And I have just come so full circle on this one, and I appreciate this.
So, you know, Peter, and by the way, one of the things I was telling them before we roll on, you know, in the early days as a believer, particularly the first about 5 years of being a believer, one of the things that, you know, when you're young in the Lord, you're finding your way. You know, you're going to make mistakes. You're going to be unsure about, you know, about what to rely on God for. And one of the things that every time I found myself kind of out of sorts, every time I found myself feeling discouraged or unstable or not really knowing kind of what I needed to do next, I would always go back and read the books of 1st and 2nd Peter. Hmm. And the reason I would read these books was because these books, some people refer to these books as New Testament parables. I mean, Proverbs. Because they're just kind of very practical things to do. And so I always knew that when I would go back and read 1st and 2nd Peter, that I didn't find really mystical answers that were hard to sort out, that they were ambivalent in some way, that I wasn't sure exactly. You can read some of these things that are true and valuable, that are theological, about who we are in Jesus and all that kind of stuff, and that is absolutely essential. But sometimes you're just down to saying, I just need to know what to do. Mm-hmm. And I would read these books of 1st and 2nd Peter, and I'm telling you, I would scoop out every practical application in these books. And I'd say, okay, then I need to get back on course here on making sure that I'm keeping my character established. So I need to, I would go back to some of these practical things. And I'm telling you, always in a day or two, sometimes an hour or two, I would be right back confident, on top, living in victory, and able to pursue my goals and dreams.
Mm-hmm. Again, it's the affirming, you know, within your own heart of what you know to be true. Yep. And it's what we really, really want, and I think this is true for, you know, our listeners, is we want to know that practical, that next yeah. step. And the shortcut, you know, as we've said, isn't the answer.
No.
But there is a straight. Yep. You know, there is a narrow way. And with that, then comes not just the knowing,
yep.
but also then the confidence and the courage for the days that yep. are ahead.
You know, we've talked about the Hebrew alphabet a lot in the past, mm-hmm. and how that the Hebrew alphabet, you know, it starts with the goal of harmonizing heaven and earth.
Yes.
Do you want heaven on earth? That's called the kingdom of heaven. Do you want it? And the concept is, because the first letter of the Hebrew alphabet is an aleph, and an aleph is two yuds, which look like little apostrophes, that represent God's message. But then there's a vav slanted kind of diagonally in there, and the vav represents man, and man is the one that takes God's message from heaven, believes it in his heart, and then establishes and harmonizes what's happening on earth with that message.
Right.
So you have to understand. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, this is so essential, because this is where people get, you know, really messed up. And they're like, if God is so good, then why is the world so messed up? And what he has done, he says, I've entrusted you.
Yep.
You see, this is the relationship that you're talking about.
Yep.
Is he says, I've entrusted unto you to establish heaven on earth.
Yeah.
This is the relationship, you know, that we're really talking about here.
Yeah.
Is that he's not going to impose and force his way.
Yep.
But he wants to express and live, you know, his life in and in through us.
It's amazing, when Christians get in trouble, they want God to violate their will.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, mm-hmm. it's like, well, why didn't you stop me from making these bad decisions? Why didn't you stop me from committing adultery?
Wow.
Why didn't you stop yeah. me from lying in this situation? And so every time they're in trouble, it's like, you should have violated my will. But when things are going good, it's like, stay out of my business. But God will never violate your will. He will only mm-hmm. gently nudge and attempt to lead you. And let gentle be the key word there, because if you don't follow that, then, you know, then you're going to make other choices. By the way, in our cyber church right now, you know, I'm doing a series about overcoming the consequences of bad decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I want people to understand, you know, one bad decision can mess up the rest of your life, but mm-hmm. a great decision mm-hmm. can recover you from all that.
Right.
And I want to take, you know, people down that journey. So we're talking about the Hebrew alphabet. So you got the aleph, and then so I want you to understand, this is not about praying, God, get me healed. Even though healing is God's will, always God's will. This is not about, God, get me out of this financial trouble, even though it's always God's will for you to prosper. You know, there are certain things that are always God's will to prosper, but how do those things happen in our life? We don't even have to try to make any of those things individually happen if we're always seeking to harmonize heaven and earth.
Mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
if I'm walking the path of righteousness, then the Bible says in that path, there is no death. There is no trouble. It's straight. It's easy to walk. You can find your way. You're not going to stumble. You can make it. But if I'm not walking the path of righteousness, it's going to be crooked. It's going to be dark. There's going to be places to stumble. There's going to be places to get lost. There's going to be places to get hurt. All of these kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
But see, we don't love righteousness, because we really don't believe righteousness will get us the things that we want.
Hmm.
You know, we view righteousness as a hard legalistic path. It's not. But anyhow, so the next letter is the bet, aleph bet. And the letter bet, I love the letter bet, because the letter bet represents two things. It represents your house or your household and your heart. Because your household is a reflection or a manifestation of what's in your heart. And so he's saying, all right, if you want to harmonize heaven and earth, this has to happen in your heart. And so it doesn't, you know, it doesn't matter doctrinally, theologically, you know, all that stuff really does not matter if, in fact, it's not happening in your heart. So we want, you know, we want this harmonizing heaven and earth. We want it to start first and foremost in our heart. We want it to be about this intimacy, you know, between us and God. We want this to be about everything that's going to happen on this deep level between us and God. So, you know, this goes back to the fact that if what you do with God is not, in fact, based on beliefs of the heart, then it's never real. You're never going to experience the grace of God. It's just going to be something that you talk about. So we go Aleph, harmonizing our hearts with God. Mm-hmm. And then we go Bet. And then the next letter is Gimel. An interesting thing about Gimel is a picture of a camel that is running to rescue somebody, you know, that's stranded in the desert. They're in trouble. So you start realizing harmonizing heaven and earth has a lot to do with what the life I'm going to bring to other people. Mm-hmm. You know, people that are in trouble, people that need recovering, people that need to be. And so the Gimel is kind of a symbol of loving kindness.
Yeah. And First and Second Peter, this is all about a reestablishment of hope.
Yeah.
And this is what you're speaking about. Ah. You know, when I get myself, you know, in a funk,
yep.
And I feel disoriented,
right.
I feel a little bit dizzy.
Yep.
And it's just like, okay, let's get back. And now we can reestablish hope and we can go, you know, because, you know, these are different times that we're in.
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about. But now I can bring hope to others.
Yep. Well, I'm going to get out of these letters real quick, right? But I do want to, if you're
yep.
already,
do go. It, do it, do
so,
it.
So after the Gimel, once you committed yourself to loving kindness, you know, I'm bringing God to the world. I'm bringing
That's
God
right.
to hurting people. Mm-hmm. You know, it's amazing how many people, their whole prayer life is about, help me pay this bill, help me get out of this problem, help me solve this problem, get this person not to be mad. And it got nothing to do with serving anybody. It's really not about helping mm-hmm. anybody. It's no, their prayer life is no bigger than their self-centered pursuits.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the next letter is the Dalet. Oh, I love the Dalet. I've actually thought about making a little necklace.
Yeah.
With a dollet on it and a couple yeah. of interesting other little symbols.
Is it
on
one of your favorites?
It is one of my favorites. Because the dollet, and now you can't enter the dollet without first the intention of bringing heaven to earth. Uh-huh. Secondly, without approaching God from your heart. Thirdly, without being committed to loving kindness and serving the world around you. Then and only then do you realize there's a door. Now, I think about this kind of a lot like what Jesus talked about. He says, now, if you're born again, you can see the kingdom of God. It didn't say you go in. You realize there's a portal up here that I can go through. And because I've been born again, now my heart, you know, if I follow the process for being born again, which is believing what Jesus did through his death, burial, and resurrection, believing in my heart, participating in it in my heart, then suddenly I recognize this is the doorway to a different dimension. And that's what the Dalet is. The Dalet is a picture mm-hmm. of a doorway. And when you go through that doorway, it's like it's like going through a secret portal into another dimension. And, you know, I don't know that America will last long enough for this to happen. I've actually had a couple of motion picture producers approach me wanting a couple of my movies that I've got scratched out. And in one of them, it would be about how that in the end times, believers discover how to go through the Dalit and overcome all of the circumstances and attacks that's coming against them, you know. But anyhow, so I just love that concept that no matter where I am, no matter what situation I'm in, I can, bam, I can go through the Dalit. And suddenly, suddenly I'm in a different realm and I'm facing what's around me differently. So the Dalit takes you to the hay. And we're not going to go much farther, but I just want to remind people. I've talked about this on here before. Now, the hay, is it represents not only the presence of God, but it represents God breathing new life into a situation. And the hay is like a rectangle standing up on end, and there's no bottom on it, so the line is completely open. And then in the top of the Dalit, on the left-hand side, there's the corners don't connect. So there's a little gap right there. Now, when Jesus said, broad is the gate that leads to destruction, they knew he was talking about the hay. Because the bottom of the hay is open, and you can just fall right through the bottom because broad is that pathway to destruction. But he says, up there in that, up there, you see that little gap right up there where the light and life of God is shining through? That's the narrow path. And you can go through that narrow path if you want to. Now, sadly, people have interpreted the idea that Jesus was talking about how hard it is to get saved. It ain't hard to get saved. What's hard and challenging is to admit to ourselves that there is a gateway and we can go through that gateway if we die to self and surrender ourselves fully to God and being servants of God. And so through that Dalit, you can go through that Dalit. And now I won't go into every letter of the Hebrew alphabet now. From here all the way to the end starts talking about what you can experience because you chose the narrow way.
Wow.
You know, like the Vav is the next one, which is the tent peg where you anchor yourself to God. The letter after that is the Zayin, which represents the sword, God fighting for you and protecting you. The next one is the Ket, which talks about this this connection that you have that nobody can see, you know, between you and God. I mean, every letter in the Hebrew alphabet from that point on talks about what happens in our life because we choose the narrow way. Now, the narrow way is not about gifts. The narrow way is always about character.
Got it.
Thanks for the journey, Jim.
Yeah.
Well, I know that's repetitious.
It's not. And again, to get there, and this is what I find, you know, this is where we do make disciples.
Yeah.
You see, because I don't want you to just, you know, kind of catch a little nugget here. Oh, there's a good one. I'm going to put that one in my pocket. No, this is how you get to take the journey for yourself.
Right.
You know, you get to go through the narrow gate yourself. This, you see, this is the invitation. And so if lights are turning on for you, you know, just don't allow it to be tantalizing and, you know, just in your thought, but it's just like, wow, I want to take that journey.
You know, there's some, I share some stories comfortably because I know how to share some stories that I think are pretty monumental in a way that doesn't glorify me. I'm not interested in glorifying me. I'm not interested in anybody being like me or doing what I did. I'm interested in inspiring people to say everything that God has ever done for anybody, including Jim Richards or Bob and Audrey, everything God's ever done for anybody is mine. That's the inspiration we're trying to bring. You can make your journey, doesn't matter where you are, and our stories are only to inspire you to connect with God, make this journey, this journey for yourself. But I want you to understand that many people have said to me, like in my personal coaching group, very often when we introduce a new topic, like right now we're going through, golly, probably the most challenging topic you could go through, and that's escaping from codependency. And I'm telling you that this is, to escape from codependency, you got to deal with more personal, deep stuff than anything you've ever dealt with.
Right.
So anytime we have a lot of new people come into one of these coaching segments, one of the things we always get is, you know what? There's just too much to this. I can't do it all. I'm quitting. And, you know, being overwhelmed is an internal form of resistance.
Yes.
You know, wow. There's all kinds of ways that you can get resistance. And resistance is basically when you come up with a what seems like a logical reason for not continuing to go forward.
Mm-hmm.
And so I understand this, but here's one.
So it's almost like that pullback, like being overwhelmed is sign your internal, maybe some of your experiences or maybe some of your unbelief or some of your doubt or some of your fear is literally just wrapping yourself around you and overwhelmed like a rope. We'll say, let's just not go there. That's a little,
this is just a little too much.
This is a little too close to home.
Yeah.
This is going to dig up some pain and maybe something that you're not going to want to see again. You know, this is going to be scary.
Well, you know, there's some laws of the kingdom. And probably based on the parable of the pearl of great price. In that parable, that person, when they realized the pearl was available, they went and sold everything they had to go back and buy the field. They didn't try to steal the pearl. They didn't try to get the pearl and run away with it and just, all right, I got the pearl, but I didn't really have to honestly pay the price here. And so one of the first principles of the kingdom is you have to want this more than you want anything else. And if you don't want this more than you want anything and everything else, you will always find an excuse, a justifiable excuse to stop pursuing it. You know, in my personal life, I want me and Brenda to be in love more than I want any other thing in my personal life. That's it.
Right.
Now, when you want that, you never stop working toward it. You never stop trying to learn how to, like, I never stop trying to figure out how to be a better husband. Never, never, because this is what I want. I, you know, but when Brenda and I got married, because we didn't know the world would get this bad this quick. I always knew it would happen in my lifetime. But, you know, my one goal was I want to spend 50 years with you being happy. So, you know, in my heart, I felt like, okay, we'll probably die together at about 80.
You know?
And so to stay with somebody 50 years, you got to continuously grow. You got to continuously change. You got to continuously learn things about them because you're changing. You know, your kids are growing up, they're leaving, your income's changing, your health is changing. So, you know, our needs are different. So there has to be this conscious attentiveness to one another, but also a conscious willingness then that whatever you perceive, you're going to take whatever steps you need to take to accomplish what you want in that relationship. Well, that's really the way it is with God. Everything is changing around. Now, God's not changing, but everything around us is changing. Everything in our own life is changing. All of these circumstances are changing, which means I need to understand how to live this in this moment. How I lived this in 1974, that gives me hope. That gives me something to look back on and be encouraged, but that doesn't tell me how to live it now. And so you're in this kingdom journey, you're always attentive to God, and you got to want this more than you want anything else. So that there's never a day you get up and say, you know what? I think I've gone as far as I'm going to go.
Right. Never.
It is like a parent-child relationship.
Yeah.
You know, because the child keeps growing and changing, you know, from an
needing different infant. Things.
Yeah, needing different things. And so you do grow and you have to mature with them.
Yeah.
You know, and well into adulthood.
You know, that was one of the hardest things with our kids growing up, man. You know, about the time I would get figured out what their crazy was right now, they would grow and get a new crazy. And I would be all frustrated, like, okay, what happened? You know, what happened? Things were great. Things were going good. What happened? And Jim and Brenda would always just say, Jim, you know, they're just growing up. They're just changing.
Yeah.
And every time I'd get a handle on where we were, they would grow up, and then I got to figure out, I can't hold them, you know, I can't keep them where they were. I can't control that growth. They're going to have that growth. They're going to become the people that they want to be. So if I'm going to walk in love, I've just got to go, okay, I got to try to understand you today. I got to understand what you want. But that's the way kingdom living is. Now, I just got to tell you, this sounds mean, sounds judgmental, and I am not basing this on judgment. I am basing this on the thousands of counseling sessions I have had, thousands. Mm-hmm. And you know, me and you were just talking about it, Audrey, just before the program, we were talking about how many people do we sit down with that solving their problem is really not that difficult, but they're just not teachable. They're not willing to do it. They're not willing to make any changes. They're not willing to grow. They're not willing to deal with any issues.
Right, to walk through the door.
And so, you know, as counselors, the main thing we do is just try to draw a compelling enough picture for you that you look at it and go, oh, yeah, that's worth it. That's worth the pain that I might have to face. That's worth what I might go through. That's all we're doing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So,
it's seeing life's, you know, circumstances, you know, seeing what's going on in the world around us, the relationships that we're experiencing, you know, one with another, you know, fixing or altering what's happening.
Yeah.
That's not the answer.
No.
You see, you still get to be you.
Yep.
No matter what is going on around you. You see, this is the big part. And this is for others, it's just like you still are allowed to bring heaven on earth.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Wherever that may be.
Yep.
When you step into a situation, when you cross that threshold, you can absolutely influence the atmosphere.
Yep.
You if you allow yourself, you can be an agent. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Heaven on earth, no matter where you go.
But you know, most people walk into a situation saying, whose fault is this? Who are we going to blame? And once we figure out who's going to blame, that person is the one who's got to fix it. Well, you know what? You might be married to a really stupid person, really lazy, stupid person that ain't never going to fix it.
Right.
And so you're going to be unhappy your whole life.
Yes.
Because you're waiting on that person.
Yep.
And that's all about just judgment and blame. You know, we got to walk into every situation.
And waiting for something, and literally the frustration of waiting for something that's never going to happen.
Yeah, never going to happen. So we got to walk into every situation. So who am I in Jesus? Do I want this? Do I want to feel this way or not? That's, you know, that's the thing I always, when people come to me and they're mad, upset about something, I say, well, here's the first question you got to ask yourself. You know, do you like the way you feel? Well, no. Then are you going to, you know, are you going to choose to continue to feel this way or choose something else? They're like, well, I can't help it. It's like, well, yeah, if you can't help it, then the real truth is you got a problem with who you believe God is, and you got a problem with who you believe you are, because you're the only one that can help it.
Right, right.
So all of that to say, I'm going to say something, and I don't know if I've ever said this in public. I don't even feel comfortable saying this in public. I am not trying to make me and how I manage my life a standard, because, you know, one of the things that people think, they think, yeah, but see, Jim, you're in the ministry. You don't have to get up and go to work every day. Well, first of all, they don't realize I probably work more hours than they do.
Right, right.
Because being in the ministry, about 75% of the time as you're in the ministry, you're doing managerial work that makes it possible for you to have a few hours a day to go do ministry work. Mm. You know, they don't realize all this backscene administrative stuff that we have to do to keep things going. There's no, you know, anybody that says they're in a full-time ministry is an idiot. You know, because there ain't no full-time ministry. You know, full-time ministry is I will work about 75% of the time to do the administrative work, to do all the technical things I have to do, you know, to go to meetings, be involved with people. And all of that creates the opportunity for me to take about 25% of my time and devote it to ministry.
Hmm.
I mean, that's my take on it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to say something, though. If I come across as self-righteous or anything like that, you guys say so. It's not going to hurt my feelings. But I want you to understand, when I became a believer, you know, I worked a full-time job just like everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
But I got up at 4 o'clock every single morning for years. And if I woke up in the middle of the night, I got up.
Mm.
And when I would get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, or when I would get up in the middle of the night, I would go either read the Bible and meditate, or I would pray and meditate and just try to listen to the voice of the Lord. And then I'd go back to bed and set my clock and get up. you know, get up in time to go to work. And then at night, when I got off work, I would come home, eat dinner, go out on the streets, and spend hours out on the street ministering to people. But the thing was, and man, I kind of don't even like saying this. I mean, honestly, my life is not the model. But I'm saying this, every time I would want to quit, and I would. That, man, I'm telling you, there were so many times, like, I am so tired, I can't even think, I can't even function. And there would be a part of me that's like, look. And I, you know, I mean, every now and then I would stop deliberately and chill and rest, and so I wouldn't, you know, push myself too hard. But at some point of taking a break and resting, at some point, that part of me that wanted this more than anything else, that wanted kingdom living, that wanted this deep intimacy, God, that part of me that wanted this more than I want anything else would energize me. And I could get back up and go, bam, I'm, you know, okay, I took me a little rest. Now I'm getting back on this journey. And you have to shut that, you have to deliberately say no to that for it to go away. It doesn't just go away. You don't just one day wake up and say, you know what, I'm just too tired to seek God anymore. No. You choose to put your attention somewhere else. You know, people got frustrated with me all the time because we'd be together and I'd say, you know what, I can't hang out with y'all. I got to go pray. Wait a minute. We planned this. I'm like, I don't care. I got to go pray. I mean, I can't even tell you how many hundreds of times I did that. How many people got offended at me because we would plan events. And if I suddenly got this need to go pray, I would go pray. And so many times, you know, I tell people this all the time. In the book of Acts, as well as in the Gospels, the miraculous things that happen spontaneously happen in between the planned things. So you know, you'd have like Peter and John saying, okay, we're going to go to the temple and pray at whatever time, you know, they were going that morning to pray. Their plan wasn't to find a crippled man and get him healed.
Right.
Their plan was a godly plan, and this is what we're doing to develop our life. And in between where I am and doing what I'm going to do next would be where they would always encounter and have this incredibly supernatural event. And the same way with Jesus. How many times Jesus said, okay, we're going to go from here to there. And on the way there, some demon-possessed person would meet him. Or on the way there, some cripple or some person would get healed. It's like all of the, nothing happens in a stationary life.
Yeah, and I've had moments where I overthink this. And I say, So to plan or not to plan, that is the question. Because I can overplan, but then wait a minute, isn't it just like God's, you know, man's plans are many, but God's purposes will prevail. So should I not be making a plan? No. And so people come to me at this and I'm like, no. This is not about plan or not to plan. This is about absolutely moving forward, making plans, but being so flexible within those plans that you can easily just veer the right. But we're following a plan. Of course we follow a plan.
I've seen some phenomenal miracles happen where I'd have somebody with me and we would be on our way to do something and I would get this sense of, wait a minute. And that drives people crazy when I do that. I'm telling you, because so many times, you know, it'd be crusades that we were, I wouldn't care if I was an hour late getting to a crusade meeting if I was going to get somebody saved and healed and delivered. You know what I mean? I wasn't late all the time. I wasn't habitual. I didn't ever use this for excuse, but it didn't matter what I was doing. If I got this sense of stop, look around, see what's going on. Mm-hmm. And man, I would just have people pushing me. It's like, look, we got people waiting on us. I'm like, I know. But the next thing you know, I'm snatching some cripple up somewhere and he's walking, getting saved, getting healed and having a revival on a street corner. You know what I mean? And it's like, I couldn't plan to be there.
Right.
I was just passing through, just like Jesus passing through all the places where people came out to meet him and drag the sick people. So we're not saying that your life is built around perfect planning. We are not saying that your life is built around all of these momentary, instantaneous, inspirational events.
Right. It's yes and both.
Yeah.
Yes.
We're saying that you have to plan and be open to the Holy Spirit. And you're planning because you want this most But it happens between what you're planning.
You're planning because this is what you want the most, but have things happen in between. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Bob.
I just want to, jump in here just a little bit because I'm having flashbacks.
Okay.
If I can. Because I remember myself as a young, believer and so desperately wanting the things of God that I would hear, persons like yourself, Jim, and it's just like, oh, so that's what I need to do. You see, I need to get up at 4 o'clock. I need to do this. I need to do, I put myself in that place.
Yep. Right.
So if that's what I want, then I have to be, like this.
Which is not and what so, I'm saying. You know that.
I know, exactly. But I know that this is how people hear. Mm. And so the next thing is that what we're really, again, this is the invitation for you. And this is the invitation because too often we focus on, the method. And this is an invitation of relationship. And it will be so unique for you. And also, it's motivation.
Yep.
You see, what's going on with regards to the motivation, behind it? Is it a real fear motivated? Or is there that confidence, the belonging of love?
Yeah.
And so on the outside, the actions can look the same.
Absolutely.
But what's the motivation behind it?
Well, I always look at my relationship with Brenda. I did not pursue Brenda out of fear. I pursued her out of love. And I didn't face my limiting issues. You guys, y'all have known me a long time, and I'm sure you've seen me grow out of a lot of my crudeness. But you got to realize, number one, I grew up in a crude environment. It was years. I insulted people all the time and didn't even know I insulted. I couldn't even understand why they were, why they were upset. Because, I came from an environment where if you were sitting down playing a card game and you thought that the guy was cheating, you'd just get up and smack the crap out of him or punch him in the face. And so, that was the way we handled things. And so, then you get around, Christians and you just say, I didn't like the way you did that. And then they cry and carry on and get mad and get offended and go gossip about you. I'm like, what is wrong with you, you baby? What's the deal? So I was crude. I didn't understand how sensitive people were. I didn't understand offending people. And I'm telling you, you can go back in my past and, man, I offended a lot of people over the years very, very much unintentionally. And then another thing that I ran into, I'm reaching people that nobody knows how to reach. Man, I'm out here with hookers. I can remember one time we had about 3 murderers in our church at one time. And, we not only had to lead them to Jesus, but then we had to sit down and walk them through dealing with the fact that you have murdered people. We had drug addicts, we had hookers, we had people that were in porno movies. I mean, we had every kind of messed up thing. So you had to be a little edgy with that group.
Right.
And so I was comfortable with that because that was the people that I grew up with. Well, then I would go preach in some really straight-laced church, and I would make some edgy, not good. I remember one time I was doing a meeting there in Canada, and you guys were there, and I was so sick of the church. I was comparing TBN, like if you were, and I said, at home, when I turn on my channel that goes to TBN, if I turn over one more channel, there's Beavis and Butthead. And so I'm sitting here looking at TBN, and I'm flipping to Beavis and Butthead. I'm like, Beavis and Butthead are more credible than TBN. Do you remember that? I don't know if you remember that. But man, people got mad. Well, the thing is the kind of people I could reach, you had to be that brutally honest because they didn't believe TBN. I wasn't really out trying to attack TBN. I was trying to say, this, you look at some of the stuff, and if you don't have this background, it don't make any sense to you, and you just turn it off.
No, right.
So, man, I mean, I would offend everybody. I would offend pastors. Sometimes I just needed to be offended, but.
So let me ask this, Jim. So in bringing this up and having this conversation together, are we entering another season, within the church? because I mean it's been different. And again, we're talking about this time of uncertainty.
Yeah.
And I think what I'm hearing from you is I remember when.
Yep.
And we're entering into that season again.
Yes.
Where it has to be as real and even more.
Yep.
Otherwise, you might find yourself shipwrecked.
You will not only find yourself shipwrecked, but you will find yourself totally irrelevant in the lives of the people that you love. You know, we both, you know, we got the my buddy Jimmy Bratcher, and you guys are buddies. And, you know, I tell people about Jimmy a lot of times. I say, you know, this is a guy that plays to the Hells Angels biker clubs, the outlaw biker clubs. He gets in places that most Christians could not get in and actually get out without getting beat to a pulp. I mean, you don't go in these people's territories.
No.
And so, and people always say, well, what is Jimmy's secret? I said, well, number one, he is good at what he does. He's a great musician. And I said, but here is Jimmy's main tool. He's authentic. Mm-hmm. He's not trying to copy anybody. He's not trying to be anybody. He's just going to be who he is in Jesus. Mm-hmm. And he goes and does what he does, and his authenticity comes out. Well, that's what's always made me effective in the groups that I'm in. You know, it didn't matter if I was in the Philippines. It didn't matter if I was in China. It didn't matter if I was in Central America. If I was in Africa. It didn't matter where I was. Man, I was never effective with the straight-laced church here in America, because a straight-laced church does not want authenticity. They want you to fit into a particular kind of pattern. I'm not saying they're not good people, and I'm not saying they're not helping people. They're helping a certain segment of society that I can't help and don't even have any interest really in trying to help. But authenticity, you know, may put you with any group. It may put you with the really straight-laced Christians, because if you're authentic, that's who you are and it's how you communicate and you can be who you are in Jesus. But it also may put you, like with me out here dealing with murderers and whores and pornographers and you know, cheats and liars and drug addicts or it may put you dealing with couples like what you guys are doing, you know. What you guys do with couples, it's authentic because it's what you lived. And so, do you want to hit these last couple of words here real quick?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do this. So we were saying last night about this whole character building thing, and I hope it isn't. If you didn't listen to last week, go through and listen to it, because the very next word after self-control is patience. Now, if you don't have self-control, you can't have patience. And actually, Romans 8 tells us a really important secret to patience. I think it's down about verse, 26, somewhere there, where it says, for if we hope, we wait patiently for the promise. Mm-hmm. So the key to patience is the degree of confidence that you have in that hope, being sure, that confident expectation. So if you have hope and you trust God and this is your character, then you're not going to lose self-control. And then if you maintain self-control by the Holy Spirit, then patience functionally is the ability to stand under pressure without wavering. So you're not going to waver. You're not going to flip out because you're challenged. And then it says, then you want to add to this godliness. Mm-hmm. In other words, you want to treat people the way God treats people. You want people to see the love of God in you. And this is talking about the character traits we need to develop. And then you want to bring yourself into brotherly kindness, where you actually do have affection for these people and for their problems. And then ultimately, all this comes together in agape. And agape is where you have value for people no matter what. And it says, for if these things are in you, and if they're abounding, listen to this, it says, you will never be barren or unfruitful. In the things of God.
Yeah. Another version says ineffective or unproductive.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, this whole concept, you know, you have to realize kingdom living is life consuming. This is not for the part-time volunteer.
Yeah, right.
And when I say volunteer, I'm not talking about volunteering at church. I'm talking about volunteering at the kingdom issues. You've right. got to want this. And it's not just wanting the kingdom. You know, when you look at, and by the way, people can, if you want to get, understand this whole thing about the journey from Egypt into the kingdom of heaven, get my book, Heaven on Earth. Because this explains.
Yes.
And
yes.
the goal of every pastor is to take you on that journey. That's yes. all. That's all we're really supposed. All of our teaching, all of our preaching is supposed to equip you to take you on this journey, coming out of the world and coming into kingdom living, and mm-hmm. So that means if your desire and if your intention for going to church, and if the pastor's desire and intention for preaching and ministry are not in harmony with God's desire and intention, then it means you'll have a lot of hit and miss, good things happen in your life, but the pieces will never, ever come together into a harmonious life with heaven on earth.
Yeah.
I'm done.
I've really appreciated this, just the synopsis in your heart and your experiences. And you just really shared your life with us, Jim. And what's come through loud and clear for me today is you have to really want it.
Yeah.
It's
want
not,
it.
It's come through loud yeah. and clear. You right. have to really want it. It says strive. My yeah. version of 2 Peter says strive yeah. to make it sure. Because if you do these oh. things, you're not going to stumble, but you're going to receive a lavish reception. I mean, mm-hmm. this is lavish yeah. on the other side mm-hmm. of the kingdom.
Well, you know, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, just sustained hope within the heart of a, yeah. of a believer comes with passion. Yeah.
Yes.
And with that passion, you do have you have an ability
yeah.
to articulate the vision and the desire of your heart.
Yeah. yeah.
And so to sustain that hope within you, and as you shared earlier, to be able to bring that hope to others,
yeah.
you know, as that camel, you know, goes to rescue others, yeah. it comes from a hope that is yeah. sustained by a passion of yeah. your heart.
You know, I started out, I'm not going to make this long, but, you know, I started out talking about how comparing this to my walk with my wife. You know, so it's like, now here's something. One of the things that people hate about me more than anything else, and I know a bunch of things people hate about me, but one of the main things that people hate about me is nobody can make me do anything. I'm sovereign because God is sovereign. I'm created in God's likeness and image. And I found the only way to stay free in life is to only do things for my reasons. If you ask me to do something, you might have your reasons for wanting me to do something, but I'm telling you this. If I comply, it's going to be because of my reasons. Now, this yeah. means we can't get down the road and me get mad at you and say you manipulated me. Because I'm doing it for my reasons, nobody's manipulating me.
There's yeah. zero chance of manipulation.
Yeah. So you realize with me and Brenda, it's like, you know, I love you, but I'll probably never, I mean, I will consider what you want out of this, and I will probably try to find a way to make sure that happens for you.
Yeah.
But I'm not doing this because you have any control over me. I'm not doing this. I am sovereign. And yeah. so as such, you know, so me and Brenda got this 49-year relationship now, and, or excuse me, 39-year relationship. And we stay in love because every day we put effort and energy into accomplishing and living a certain kind of lifestyle. And here's the thing. I never try to make Brenda do anything. And she's given up on trying to make me do stuff. Now, when she was young, she tried. You know, she finally figured it out. I can ask him and probably get anything I want. But the minute I start trying to make him do something, I ain't never going to get it. It ain't never going to happen. Wow. But it's that way with God. The word love, agape, is value. If you have any value at all for what God, the quality of life that God can give you, then every day you're going to get up and make this journey because you want it more than you want anything else. And with Brenda, yep. Yep. I wanted me and Brenda to have love more than anything I had with anybody else in this world.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
and so mm-hmm. there it is. And same way with God.
Right.
That was
right.
so well said. And I'm right. so glad you said that. That was very important. That just sort of brings a synopsis mm-hmm. to this whole thing.
And when you love, I'll make important to me what's important to you.
Exactly.
That's right. Exactly, Bob. And thank mm-hmm. you for that, by the way.
You're welcome.
I love this. This is such a great journey. Good. I'm loving the direction we're going. And you can't make somebody want something.
Nope.
I've tried it. So I've got people right now that I'm counseling right now. So because we get a lot of couples with betrayal issues, and some of these women that I'm counseling, they still want the other person. And I'm saying, I'm sorry. I can't help you want your husband.
Nope.
I'm not going to even help you want something. That is your choice.
Nope.
Anyway, it's a whole nother ball of wax.
Well, the simplicity of it comes down to this.
Yeah.
I'm going to be, and I've told Brenda this, I'm going to be who I am in Jesus. And if you don't want that, you're not going to want me, and I'm never going to try to keep you in this relationship. If you ever decide this is not the version of me you want, you go find somebody you do want. You go find somebody that you do value. But if you value who I am in Jesus and the kind of the way I treat you because of who I am in Jesus, then you'll always do everything you can to keep me walking with God. Because I always tell Brenda, you don't want to know me.
Right.
Not apart from this. God. You don't want to know
what happens if I'm not hanging out with Jesus. Right. You don't want that version. That's the other gym.
That's the other gym that tries to sneak out every now and then.
Sneaky.
Okay.
Oh,
all right.
So
big
much,
day,
Jim.
Big day. And
we
I know we
guys.
kept you overtime in class.
Yes.
That's right.
All right. Take your time. Go
but
back.
But you really want God.
This is
and we
one
know
of those
that, about you.
That you want to re-listen to.
Yeah.
But to hear, because I really believe that your counselor, the Holy Spirit, will speak far beyond our words.
I love that.
And that's the beauty of it, because this will become very personal and applicable for your own heart and life.
Yeah. Absolutely. All right, guys. We love you. We love you, Jim and Jim.
Love
thanks,
you guys.
Jim.
Okay, see you later.
Have a wonderful week.
Bye.
You love evil Jim and holy Jim. Okay.
I love all Jims.
Oh, you know how many good things?
I love all
Let's
that
talk
is
about
Jim.
The good things about Jim.
There you go.
We know so many good things.
That's right.
We're talking about
godly Jim.
Yeah.
Godly Jim. Okay.
I never even can imagine hating any part of Jim.
All right, guys.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for pressing in there, man. You really rocked it.